You are never supposed to do this, and we would normally never do this. But we're going to start this episode by reading someone's Social Security number.
This is the most infamous Social Security number in the world.
Yeah, and weirdly, the most popular Social Security number.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Our apologies in advance to Hilda Schrader Witcher of Lockport, New York.
Do it.
Because her number is 07805-1120.
Oh, God. It feels terrible.
It feels bad. It felt like we said Voldemort, like, out loud.
In this day and age, your Social Security number is this unique part of you that you are supposed to guard with your life.
Because it is your life. Somebody can use it to help steal your identity, charge a bunch of Xboxes to credit cards in your name, to steal your tax refund.
But that is not the story of how we got Hilda Witcher's number.
No, this story, as you may guess from the name Hilda, happened a while ago in the 1930s.
There was a manufacturer of wallets.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we should probably introduce you.
Okay.
This is Carolyn Puckett, a longtime employee of the Social Security Administration.
And how many years did you work there?
I worked for Social Security for 37 years.
Back in the 1930s, Social Security numbers were these brand new things. People didn't really understand what they were or how you got one.
They were invented as part of the Social Security program. You'd have taxes taken out of your paycheck, and then the Social Security Administration would keep track of all of that money using your brand new Social Security number.
So in 1938, a wallet manufacturer in Lockport, New York, decided to promote its product by showing how a Social Security card would fit into the wallet.
But instead of putting some random number on a piece of paper, the head of the company used a very realistic number.
He used the number of his secretary, Hilda Schrader Witcher.
07805-1120.
This wallet containing Hilda's number was sold at Woolworth's to thousands of people who bought the wallet and then got very confused.
A lot of people, when they got that card, they started using it as their own number. And they started working under that number.
Why?
Well, you know, they didn't really understand how you got a card. They didn't understand the numbering system. And so people adopted this as their Social Security number.
You know what this reminds me of? It's like buying a picture frame from a store and just going like, hey, I like this beautiful couple that's in the frame. I'm just going to keep this on my mantelpiece.
Exactly.
Or it's like getting the frame and being like, oh, this must be my family.
Yes.
I should marry these people.
These are cool.
It took the Social Security Administration decades to clean up this mess.
Matter of fact, the peak year that it was used was 1943, and at that time, there were 5,755 people still using that as their own Social Security number. And matter of fact, as late as 1977, there were still 12 people using that Social Security number.
Hilda, of course, got a new Social Security number.
And in an interview, she was quoted as saying, I can't understand how people can be so stupid.
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith.
I'm Kenny Malone. And in all seriousness, who was more stupid? People who thought you got a Social Security number issued to you through a wallet at Woolworth's, or a nation that decided to base your entire personal financial life on a 9-digit number?
Today on the show, we're going to answer a question that we've had for a long time. How did this happen? How did we pick this particular system of 9 numbers?
Hard to remember, easy to steal.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. For one low, transparent fee, Betterment gives you personalized advice and invest your money, working to increase your long-term returns while providing advanced data security. For a limited time, you can get up to 1 year managed for free. The more you deposit, the longer they'll waive your management fee. For more information, visit betterment.com/planetmoney. Betterment. Rethink what your money can do.
This week on Invisibilia, we ask, what's the best way to lose? We look for clues in beekeeping, grammar, and in my 74-year-old mom's desire to jump out of an airplane.
All right, guys, I'm going to start getting load one trained up.
I'm so excited.
I'm Hannah Rosen. Join us.
The Social Security number was invented at a single meeting, a gathering of what we have to assume were the greatest numeric minds of their generation.
Now, to be fair, we know almost nothing about this meeting in reality, but we did ask.
Did this meeting have a name? Like, was this like the big number confab of 1935? Did people fly in from around the country?
Probably did not fly in from around the country, since they were government agencies and they tended to be headquartered in Washington, D.C.
True.
That is our friend Carolyn Puckett again. Stickler for facts.
When Carolyn worked at the Social Security Administration, she wrote the story of how the Social Security number wound up controlling our lives.
Yes, and of course, that was never the intention when the Social Security number was invented. Would you like to hear a little bit about the history?
We would.
I think we would.
It starts with the signing of the Social Security Act on August the 14th, 1935.
And this Social Security measure gives at least some protection to 30 millions of our citizens.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1935. And the idea of Social Security was pretty simple. We got your back.
All workers would pay into the system, and then when you can no longer work, some money comes back to you or to your family.
Now, all they had to do was find a way to track every single worker in the United States.
There were already some Social Security type systems in Europe, so the first thing they did was to contact the experts in Europe to see what they suggested, and they pretty much suggested that it just couldn't be done.
Europe was like, that is a terrible idea. You can't track every single person every single year for the rest of their lives. It's 1935. We don't have iPhones yet.
And America was like, yeah, okay, Europe, you know what? Hold my drink.
Oye, oye, oye. All right, everybody sit down. Everybody sit down. We bring to order the big number confab of 1935.
The following is a recreation, but the story is based on real ideas that were on the table.
Let me get to character. All right, everybody. Europe says it cannot be done. But let's show them how we do things in the United States of America.
And of course, everyone is like, yeah!
Okay, so how do we tell everyone apart? Super easy. Let's just use everybody's names. Everybody's got a name.
Technically, that was true.
What was wrong with your name?
Well, as you know, Robert Smith, there are probably a whole lot of Robert Smiths. As a matter of fact, back in the 1930s, there was an association of Fred Smiths in New York City. Because there were so many of them, they were getting each other's mail, and they set up a little association so they could exchange mail and get everybody straight.
All right, let me cross that out. We have a suggestion from the floor. Fingerprints.
And everybody's like, yeah, fingerprints, those are unique. Everybody's got those.
But, of course, that was connected in everybody's mind with criminals.
Ah, right. Every American worker getting hauled into a government building for fingerprinting would look bad.
Okay, fine. Fine, fine. No bad ideas. Numbers. Numbers. Like a human license plate. We'll just do numbers. Like 9 of them. We'll throw some dashes in there. Like 3 and then 2 numbers and a dash. Like 4 numbers. Who could possibly object to that? They're just numbers.
And of course, you know that somebody in the back of the room at this point stands up and they're like, a reading from the book of Revelation, chapter 13, verse 18. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666.
666.
That was not going to work. Not for the first 3 numbers, at least.
Social Security has never and never plans to use 666.
So the Social Security Administration didn't want to be accused of handing out the mark of the beast.
Right.
And in fact, being a sign of the end times.
Right, exactly.
All right, let's wrap up this confab. We all agree, 9 numbers, no mark of the beast. First 3 numbers will be like a geographic code, which we will later stop doing, but let's just do it for now. Meeting adjourned.
And that is a very dramatic version of how we ended up with a Social Security number. The next hurdle was handing those numbers out.
Sure, they had to figure out what number would go to which person and then how people would remember what their number was. And at first there was this suggestion to give everyone their number on little metal dog tags like they have in the military, which would have taken literal tons of metal. So they went with a little thick paper card they were going to send out to people.
And remember, this isn't a huge deal. You just needed this number to track your earnings, and that's basically it.
Like any good numerical system, you start with number 1, or in this case, 001, 0100001.
At first, they wanted to give this lowest number away as like an honor. They offered it to a guy who'd played a huge role in helping Social Security get set up.
But he was like, no, thank you. Some other bigwig turned it down as well. And so it landed on the pile and was handed out like any other old number.
That 00101000001 went to a Grace Owens in New Hampshire.
Do we know what her job was she needed the Social Security number for?
I don't really know anything about her other than she got the lowest number.
Sounds like the job for two intrepid reporters.
We'll find it.
Okay.
We started to look into this. Who was this Grace Owen who got this super special, really easy to remember Social Security number?
She died decades ago, but...
Hello.
Hi, is this Vivian?
Yes.
We were able to track down Vivian Clark.
I only knew Grace after I married her nephew in 1961. And
Vivian is, I guess you'd call her, a niece-in-law of Grace Owen. Didn't remember much about Grace.
She smoked like a chimney.
Vivian said there is another cousin who could know more.
Hello.
Hi, is this Pam?
It is.
Pam Perdue.
Pam Owen Perdue, and I am the niece of Grace Dorothy Owen.
Pam says her Aunt Grace never had kids. She worked as a secretary. She was married once, got divorced, remarried, and became Grace Owen Muzzy. And Pam remembers that even from a young age, this lowest number was a big deal. She remembers her dad telling her about it.
And I also remember my dad telling me that she went on the show I've Got a Secret.
I've Got a Secret, presented by Winston, America's best-tasting filter cigarette.
I've Got a Secret was this show where a panel of celebrities tries to figure out why you're sort of famous. And this is actually the only tape we could find of Grace Owen Muzzy's voice.
Will you tell our panel, please, what your name is and where you're from?
My name is Mrs. Grace Muzzy from Concord, New Hampshire.
Now, Mrs. Muzzy has a secret which she will whisper to me and we'll show it to you at home.
And that is pretty much all she says. She thoroughly stumps the panel.
She is the possessor of the very first Social Security number.
Technically the lowest number. It's complicated. Don't worry about it.
And the number is 0010101.
At this moment, they are holding up a giant copy of her Social Security number for a national television audience. Like it was no big deal, which it wasn't yet.
Right. If someone was watching this on live television, sure, they could, like, steal Grace's Social Security number. But probably the worst thing that they could do is use that at their job, and then their Social Security taxes would go into Grace's account.
Which I guess in that case would mean that Grace would make more money from Social Security.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Muzzy. You have really stumped the panel. Here's your $80, a carton of Winston's, and our thanks for being with us tonight.
She must have loved those Winston's.
She does look very happy in the tape, I will say.
Now, I know this just seems like the answer to some trivia question, the woman with the lowest Social Security number. But what I saw in this tape was a foreshadowing of something that was about to happen. That you don't just get a number and file it away. In some weird way, you are your Social Security number. Grace was considered by the world an interesting person, because she had an interesting number.
And so we know that eventually this number would take over our lives. But how exactly did that happen and when did it happen?
Yeah, who's responsible for that?
Well, the federal government to some extent.
Carolyn Puckett.
As early as 1943, there was a presidential executive order.
A presidential executive order that said, look, if you're a federal agency and you need a new record system, stop. Do not invent a whole new one. Take a look at that thing they've got going on over at Social Security.
Pretty sweet.
Why don't you just use that?
So wait, when did the IRS start using it for taxes?
1962.
Around the same year, the Social Security number becomes the ID number for federal employees.
Medicare starts using it for enrollment in 1965.
Veterans Administration started using it in 1966.
Okay, how about the Department of Defense?
Department of Defense started using it in 1969 as the military identification number.
Food stamps, 1977.
Federal loans, 1982.
HUD programs, 1988.
And just one after another.
Driver's licenses, federal workers' compensation, marriage licenses.
The Social Security number becomes so broadly used that by default, it becomes our national identification.
Kellen, at any point did the people who work for the Social Security Administration, the people who went through all this trouble to invent this number for a legitimate, small, focused reason, didn't they tell everyone to just knock it off? Like, you're going to ruin this number.
Well, the Social Security Administration did not have the legal authority to restrict the use of the Social Security number. They still don't. So there was no way Social Security could stop people from using it for what they wanted to.
As all of these agencies and businesses started using the number, what was the tipping point where it went from an innocuous number that really didn't mean a ton to something that contained your entire identity potentially?
I suspect when one's credit history was tied in with a Social Security number.
Your credit history, which is basically a history of how often you have paid your bills on time, whether you are a worthwhile risk for someone to extend credit or to lend you money. For decades, credit reporting agencies have been gathering all this information, all this dirt on you. But all of a sudden, with a Social Security number, they could tie it all together and bring in so much more information about your life that one mistake could follow you for decades.
And so your Social Security number wasn't just tied to government benefits or contributions. It was tied to credit cards, to loans, to the mistakes you made. And that's fine as long as, you know, there isn't some conglomerate with hundreds, thousands, millions of these that could get hacked one day.
Welcome to the Equifax Automated Security Freeze System.
The Equifax hack. We did a whole episode about the history of credit bureaus and the Equifax hack, and if you didn't get a chance to hear it, check it out, and you will hear just how bad things can get.
Now, to be fair, I have personally noticed over the last decade or so that there are fewer people putting my Social Security number on random forms or on my medical insurance card. People seem to be a little bit more respectful of the digits.
Yeah, in fact, states and the federal government have tried to scale back the use, but the damage is done.
You know, we kept asking Carolyn, if you could go back in time and redesign this system, is there a better way to do it? And she said, no. No, the Social Security number is designed fine for what it was supposed to do.
But the problem, clearly, was that the United States sort of needed some kind of national identification, but didn't want to do it. Not with the picture and the fingerprint and all of the things you would actually need to do it correctly.
And so in fine American tradition, we half-assed it. The task fell to the closest thing that we had, 9 digits to carry the bureaucratic dreams of an entire nation.
And rather than getting upset with the Social Security number, Carolyn almost seems like sort of like wistful about it.
And we do now issue Social Security numbers to children when they're born. It actually does track you from your first day on the planet to your death.
They say that everyone dies alone. And when I'm on my deathbed, I don't know if my kids will be there or if my wife will still be around. But I do feel heartened knowing that I'm going to be laying there with my old companion.
Robert, wait, no, is this your real number?
It is my real number.
We're going to have to bleep that.
We'll bleep it.
When we come back, I've got a secret.
Brought to you by Winston.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Delta Airlines, offering the Fly Delta app. Whether by push notification, email, or opening the Fly Delta app, customers will see that their boarding pass is ready automatically. Delta is always striving to take the stress out of travel.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast.
Our dramatic recreation of the invention of the Social Security number was loosely inspired by the comedian Gary Goldman.
A special thanks this week to Janice Brown of the Cow Hampshire blog.
Love
and
it.
To listener Eric Rigler for sending us an email with the wallet story. We are planetmoney@npr.org.
This week's episode was manufactured by Sally Helm, Lena Richards, Alex Goldmark, and Bryant Erstad.
I'm Kenny Malone.
I'm Robert Smith. Thanks for listening. You know, our intern, Aviva de Kornfeld, managed to track down that incredible audio from I've Got a Secret. I never thought I would hear the voice of Grace Muzzy, but we did. But there were some negotiations about how much of that audio we could use in the story.
In fact, they required us to license a minimum of 1 minute. What you heard in the story was just about like 35 seconds worth.
But we had to pay for an entire minute. So let's get our money's worth.
So, ladies and gentlemen, come back in time with us to the year 1957.
You've settled down on the Chesterfield with a mug of Ovaltine and a pack of Winstons.
You click on the old telly.
And this is a very tough one, I'll tell you, so I'll give you an additional clue. Something that she has is the first of its kind.
And this I've Got a Secret panel, they just cannot crack Mrs. Grace Muzzy from Concord, New Hampshire.
Is it in the animal? Is it animate?
Keep playing.
No.
Was it ever live? No.
Love it. More.
Mrs. Muzzy, this thing was thought up. Was it thought up by you?
Oh, no.
We're running out of time. Come on.
Is this a work of art?
No.
3 seconds left.
Is it a mental thing more than a tangible object?
2 seconds left.
Well, let me say this.
1 second.
This is a difficult question to answer. It has
cut it.
No more.